Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
In just about a month, nearly 750,000 Oklahoma students, plus thousands more of their teachers, will return to class for the 2023-24 academic year. Normally, this is a time full of excitement and anxiety. For many students, it's, oh no, my summer's almost over. Will I have classes with my friends? Who am I getting for a teacher? Mom, can we please go back to school shopping? For teachers, it's putting the finishing touches on lesson planning, scrambling to get together everything they need for their classrooms, wondering what it'll be like to work for the new principal, or to deal with unruly students, or even worse, their parents. This year, of course, is shaping up to be anything but normal. The teacher shortage worsens, more emergency certifications are likely, billboards along I-35 woo Oklahoma teachers to, what should we call it, greener pastures in Texas. Starting salaries in the Dallas Independent School District range from $60,000 to $102,000. The state superintendent, who's supposed to be the champion of our K-12 schools, is spending his days trying to whitewash history and claiming woke teachers are indoctrinating students and lambasting teachers' unions as terrorists and seemingly doing about everything he can to destroy the public school system, which is, of course, the ultimate goal of his political backers. Oligarchs like the DeVosses and Waltons and Kochs and, well, other well-heeled right-wing deplorables. Oh, and did we mention federal and state audits and investigations into possible misspending of federal pandemic emergency funds for education? And that Oklahoma taxpayers could be on the hook for repaying $300 million? And that the state superintendent and the governor are in the crosshairs because they were in charge of that money? For the next few weeks, as the school year's opening bell nears, ObserverCast will be exploring this unprecedented attack on public education, hoping to give our listeners a fuller understanding of the right-wingers' decades-long campaign to undermine the crown jewel of American democracy. What's behind the campaign? What it means for our kids and our republic? And what can be done to save and to strengthen public education? We begin today with someone who's watched this treachery unfold up close. Former Senate President and current Observer columnist, Cal Hobson, who spent nearly 30 years working on education policy and on education funding. And someone who well remembers the days when Republican, yes, Republican Henry Bellman led the charge for Oklahoma to put its money where its mouth is, to truly invest in a top education system that would afford all, regardless of race or zip code, good fortune or bad, as fair a shot as possible at the American dream. So to give folks some perspective, Cal, we first met in about 1980 when I was a Capitol correspondent for the late, great Tulsa Tribune, and you might have just been finishing up your first term then. Would that be right?
Yes, I was elected in 78, so the summer or fall of 80 was the big national election where Reagan, wiped out Jimmy Carter and wiped out a whole lot of Democrats that thought they were going to win. So,
Wow. So you've seen just about everything in the four decades plus since.
Tried to keep up with it.
But have you ever seen anything like this? And how do you even begin to explain to most Okies what's at stake here and what dangers are at hand?
You know, there's a word that's been rattling around in my head the last couple, 3 days, and I'm actually being asked to speak at OU on an education day in the fall. And I've been trying to structure it because this word is just killing fair and honest dialogue in America about politics. And the word is hypocrisy. It just seems anymore that politicians especially, and I was guilty of some of it, I'm sure, but the hypocrisy of behavior and words is just overwhelming. Now in the political world, you can say anything, it seems, and not be held accountable. You can be indicted in three or four states and remain the most popular person in your party running for president. I mean, those concepts to me are unimaginable in America, but they're not only imaginable, they're true and seem to be reinforced by elements, especially of the Republican Party. An example, if I may, another example, real quick. Our entire Republican delegation took great glee in voting against a number of successes of President Biden. And I'll just mention one. Oklahoma is a wasteland, a desert when it comes to broadband connection. And this state is going to receive, and you've written about it, at least $1 billion, maybe more, $1.3 billion, I think, to extend broadband throughout Oklahoma. And I can't think of anything more helpful to rural Oklahoma than being hooked up as we are tonight. Those guys all voted no, and gal, and yet the press releases have just flowed. The speeches have been endless. The taking the credit for that. I mean, is there no shame? Is there no shame in voting no and then standing at the front of the podium, patting oneself on the back? That's what I mean about hypocrisy. And it's just so hard for the public to understand or comprehend who's really looking out for them and who isn't. And it fits perfectly with the thing we talk about frequently, which is, why do rural Oklahomans endlessly vote against their own best interests? And there is a prime example. They're going to reelect all those guys who voted no and are taking credit for it. I don't get it.
So do you have a notion why they do vote against their self-interest? Because it's affecting their public schools. You know, in the broadband example, I mean, our school kids across Oklahoma are going to benefit greatly from that. What doesn't get siphoned off by the folks who are running the good old boys deals that are being cut,
which is what's happening, right? We're seeing, I mean, this is literally what we see happening, is we see money siphoned into these third party vendors, and or there's lack of compliance and oversight by the state of these third party vendors. And so the money that should be going to direct services is instead ending up in someone else's pocket. Versus, you know, I just wanted to point out, like, even a school district like Norman has tremendous trouble with internet, like internet connectivity. You know, our infrastructure as a whole in the state of Oklahoma needs an upgrade, not just in the rural areas, but definitely in the rural areas, right? There are days where our school district, which once they hit middle school, is compliant, like is reliant upon MacBooks, right? They don't have textbooks anymore. They have MacBooks for instruction, and teachers, obviously. But there's days where they can't do anything online because their internet just goes completely down. And if you just think about scaling that up to what that means for people applying for jobs, for people applying for benefits, for all the things that we now are relying upon to do, you know, online. If we have a state that does not have any sort of reliable internet access, we're just falling farther and farther behind.
Well, keep, and you know, let's stay on this point real quick. Broadband. There was a special important broadband commission created to make sure that the money is spent properly. They did a nationwide search for a broadband executive director. That's all right. You know where I'm going.
Yep.
And they found a guy in I think Ohio or some other state, deeply experienced in broadband. They voted, said, let's bring this fellow to Oklahoma. The fellow says, yes, I'd love to come to Oklahoma. We'll do broadband correct. And guess what happened? Well, we know what happened. Kevin Stitt intervened with the Broadband Commission and said, nope, don't want you to hire that guy. I want you to hire the guy behind the tree, who is a former legislator, and to my knowledge, has no more knowledge or experience about broadband than I do. And I proved to you earlier tonight with my inability to even what I knew. And so now a former legislator has a $100,000 job doing the broadband deal. And that is endemic, exactly on point of what we're talking about.
Well, and then let's back up even a little bit more from that. I'm just going to like go big here and just point out that we are handicapping, not just handicapping, we are like kneecapping the people of Oklahoma if they cannot access the world through internet. I mean, we are literally kicking people in the knee, in the shins. And for some reason, the governor has such an investment in making sure it's done his way and only his way. If we'll recall what happened when the Speaker of the House, Charles McCall, tried to set up that little broadband task force, and Stitt came in and, I mean, nothing less than short of a tantrum about it, because he had his and he wanted to do it his way. We had an expert on broadband in the state house, Logan Phillips, who got, you know, Stephen Copeland. He beat Steve Copeland and then ended up, he was very vocal against the governor because of the way he was handicapping our broadband efforts. And so then we end up with this Yahoo in the position of the Broadband Commission. So, I mean, there seems to be no actual desire to see us at least get on the same page as the rest of the country.
Well, and it's proven by the way you started the get together tonight, Arnold. The enormous amount of federal money that now has been audited by Cindy Byrd, one of the straightest shooters I've ever seen at the Capitol in my time there, and she, I have it in front of me, the audit details of just the waste and stupidity on the part of Governor Stitt, let me repeat that, directly on money that was allocated directly to his office.
The buck stops at his desk.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't.
Well, it may.
But it does.
We could get into that because we got an attorney general that maybe is going to do an investigative audit, not a forensic or a numbers audit. And I think it's going to be very difficult to defend the inability for the governor, to businessman that he is, control, allocate, and account for public tax dollars, not to mention his running mate over there at the Department of Education that I presume we'll get to in a few minutes.
Does it tip Gettner Drummond, the attorney general's hand, that he dropped the state lawsuit that the former attorney general John O'Connor filed against Class Wallet, the out-of-state vendor for all this?
I mean, that was window dressing, though, right? That lawsuit was really window dressing. Like, they never even got.
Oh, absolutely! It was designed. It was designed to take the voters' eyes off the prize. What was really happening there? It was a sort of a political shell game to protect both Stitt and Ryan Walters, and it worked. It was brilliant.
I agree with you totally. Now, of course, that fellow, O'Connor, right? Lawyer out of Tulsa.
The first wholly unqualified nominee for the federal court.
I do. He wasn't just not very good, as you said. They, I think, voted unanimously. This guy could not pass law school 101, but it was interesting just how inept that guy was. you remember the fact that taxpayers are on the hook now, changing parties a bit here. People are mad about their utility bills, natural gas bills. We couldn't even get that guy to be the people's lawyer in front of the Supreme Court when the Corporation Commission had ruled that we're going to be in debt for the miscues of our public utilities for the next 20 years. I mean, you do know, don't you, both of you, the connection to Stitt with O'Connor going way back? He was Stitt's lawyer 20-something years ago when Stitt was being sued in Georgia, Indiana, and other places, and barred from those states from doing business peddling mortgages. O'Connor was his lawyer.
Okay.
Yes. Breaking news.
His Roy Cohn.
Yeah, but a lot worse. Like, not even competent. He still got banned. Like, geez.
Right. By the way, Cal, I think you misspoke a few minutes ago. You know, it is the Cooperation Commission. It's not the Corporation Commission. And they cooperate with whatever the utility companies want. So
I will try to be more cooperative.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure. That was a slip of tongue, I think.
It was, sir.
You know, I really do wish we had like competent villains in this state. You know, it would make things, I don't know, like, I really do, because so let's like come back around to our friend Ryan Walters. I had the immense pleasure of being at the Cleveland County GOP meeting the other night in the Norman Public Library. I mean, and the irony doesn't stop there, right? To have the county GOP party and Ryan banned books, Ryan Walters in that building, truly providing a perversion of the First Amendment. I could set the scene for you. They were, I mean, as soon as it caught wind that he was going to be in Norman, like central Norman, like God's country, the most liberal little, you know, peg of Norman, like it just spread like wildfire. And there was at least 100 people there, I'd say, if not more, to just kind of raise hell. But I mean, to listen to this guy. So let's talk about the contracts. A reporter asked him about the contracts, put him like on camera during the meeting. And he was like, well, see, the contractors, that's what the contractors are for. The contractors are liable because they're the contractors. We had no responsibility for what did or did not happen with that money. I was like, wow, you are. I mean, so much for Harry Truman, right? Like, the buck does not stop.
And it's just repetitive. People tend to forget, but we have EPIC with its three leaders out there, all under indictment. You've got Swadley that squandered either $14 or $18 million or were overpaid that amount of money. You have former people running the tourism department that self-dealt down at Lake Murray and buying property near where the state was going to invest money. I mean, it's just one example after another of the ineptness. And how about the school land commission? The new bright boy over there lasted about two meetings before he started, apparently self-dealing for himself. And so he was gone. I mean, I've never seen anything close to this kind of behavior by elected officials in the 40 years or so that I've watched it. And I watched some go to prison. You know, that I wasn't around for David Hall. But David Hall was a piker compared to this guy.
We've really got to talk, though. Like, there are real world implications for what happened with that federal money with the State Department of Education. Yep. You know, and the thing was, is like, it wasn't in Joy Hofmeister's cabinet in her agency. What went through, what she directly controlled in the Oklahoma State Department of Education was done by the rules, by the book, timely, and in compliance with all federal and state regulations. We know this for a fact.
And but by the way, included, and by the way, included an expansion of the counseling program in this state,
yes.
which is very helpful, and which has now been utterly destroyed by
zeroed
the
mismanagement. Out, basically. And I mean, so what we know happened based on that audit that Walters tried to explain away was he was in control of the federal dollars. He directed where those federal dollars went. It was under his direction as agency cabinet or cabinet head for education, which was made up out of thin air by Stitt. Again, because he has to assert his control over stuff when there was already a state superintendent of public instruction. And so this is where we see these contracts doled out, and they literally were not read in on the compliance that needed to happen to maintain, to properly administer federal dollars, period. Hard stop. Like they have the receipts for this. Yeah. And these were some of the, like, I think really, and people have pointed out the most atrocious piece of all of this was they make such a production about giving parents choice where their kids go to school. And what happened in this audit is it was fully revealed to the public that they're really not worried about all parents. They're only worried about affluent parents because they set up special application timelines for already for parents who could not prove that they were in need of more dollars so their kids could stay enrolled in private school, and the like 600 or something families were left out of the application process because these rich people siphoned off all the funds before they even had a chance to apply. That's I mean, true. These were needy families. These are the families that Stitt and Walters and all the student parent choice like loudmouth say this is what this is for. We're doing it for these kids. And they were the very ones squeezed out of this process.
Because there were five schools specifically identified, notified in advance, sent personal notice that these funds are going to be available, which leads me to my word of the night, again, hypocrisy. I listened to a lot of the goings on about how money is spent in education. And time after time after time, and of course, Walters was the star of doing this, they would pick out a book or some example or a librarian or a teacher or whatever, some earth-shaking sin, and name the book, and everybody gets all worked up about the safety and security. We're worried about our kids, right? That sounds great. Well, here's the hypocrisy. As they have peddled this money off, and the one church school, that's what it is, the Catholic school, on a vote of 3-2 by the board overseeing how that money was going to be spent, it's going to cost the state of Oklahoma $25 million for that gambit. And on top of that, there's not a hint, not a requirement, not a statute, not a sentence that says you are going to comply with these mm-hmm. requirements for the safety and security of our children, or the curriculum for our children, or the future of our children.
It's or just even the financial oversight and reporting requirements.
Thank you. That's exactly right. That's the hypocrisy. And it's simply because that crowd that's in there now, they do not support the 95% of our kids who go to public schools. They won't say it that way, but every action they take proves it.
So is it as simple then as if we keep a large segment of the future workforce of this state undereducated mm-hmm. and sort of down on the farm, for lack of a better term,
and preoccupied with just surviving,
then they'll work for less, they'll work no matter how dangerous the situation is, they won't complain about it. They'll be happy to get whatever you know, sir, may I have another portion that we agree to give to him? Is it that? I mean, that's pretty amazing. That's pretty draconian. I mean, golly.
Let me take you
21st century, right?
Let me take you back 35 years to the battle over House Bill 1017, which was the education and reform legislation. Mm-hmm. Most people will agree was of landmark notoriety, and it was very important. And it came down to, as you started or talked when we started, led by Henry Bellman, who in his first term had been a notorious anti-public education governor, had flipped by the time he became governor from 86 to 90. He led that battle. And as I recall, even though the Republicans, almost to a man or woman, were opposed to 1017, and they were, we only got one Republican senator to vote for it, and I'll tell you why in a minute. They were opposed because they're against taxes.
Uh-huh.
They're all embedded in this other nonsense about who's in what bathroom, or what books is the librarian with gray hair who's been the librarian at Lexington for 40 years, and nobody's ever said boo about it. They weren't down in that world. They were just against taxes. So they voted no. And that's okay. That's the, one of the planks of that party. That party doesn't exist anymore in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Party that exists in Oklahoma now are interested in primarily what goes on in other people's bedrooms, bathrooms, churches, and other such items that literally, you know, most folks thought was a private matter.
Republicans used to claim was a private matter.
That's where I was going. Smaller government, lower taxes. That is all horse hockey. They're still against taxes until they were confronted in 2018 by 35,000 educators and supporters. Then they finally, after cutting education, and I want to say a word about that, cutting education for 8 or 9 straight years during Mary Fallon's time there, they finally had to step up because we couldn't have gone any lower, you know, bottom of the barrel. That reminds me of this past Sunday when I was watching Flashpoint. And so I'll just go ahead and lay this out. I like to watch Flashpoint. I like Turpin. I like Lamb, former senator. And they had a young man on there named Representative Moore, and he's a pretty good guy out from Clinton, Oklahoma. He happens to be chairman, and Marianne, you talked about higher ed last night down in Norman. He's the chair of higher ed in the House, and they just were all hugging each other over the fact that higher ed got this year a 14% increase. So a round of applause for them. That's great.
And he got an extra squeeze from Todd Lamb, who's the new president of the University of Central Oklahoma, which is a good old boy.
We'll talk about
another episode. But that's another. Anyway, that's sorry to interrupt, but I had to throw that in.
It was more than a squeeze. I mean, it was. I'll better stop right there. This is.
Yeah, particularly, with the morality police that the Republicans have unleashed right now, this could be dangerous. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. I won't go there. But what was not said was that during that 10-year period prior to the fact that there's money now, primarily because of federal dollars and secondarily very high energy prices, higher ed had been cut 31% over the last 10 years. Now, I sent my friend Turpin a note and said, you should have at least said, let's put that into context.
Because with inflation.
Yeah. So higher ed was cut more than any other state. But we're going to cheer because these guys had a bunch of money this year to the point they didn't know what to do with it. They finally did the right thing. But we're still well behind where we should be. And that leads to what you both said, the stealing of the future of the kids of this state.
Okay. So, okay. I'm just going to go back to Wednesday night, because of course on social media, there were these accusations that the reporters just like seized on his nonsense. And of course we've all seen how his comment about the Tulsa race massacre has absolutely just like spread like wildfire around the globe. One of my very good friends, she lives here, but she's German. And she said her dad saw the headline in Germany and texted her. It's like, is this a joke? So, I mean, it's like global, right? Like we are, you know, 0 days since we're an international disgrace. But, you know, so his nonsense comment about the Tulsa race massacre, you know, that's one thing. But I mean, he made a specific comment about, he said that I don't think he quite said that they had applied for, but he said the federal dollars were coming in. And, but to, I hear that to say, that doesn't mean he actually applied for those grants. It may just mean that there are some federal dollars coming in, but he tried to kind of, you know, goose that language just a little bit. But the fact is some of the grants that we know he probably did not apply for affect things like Title I dollars, right? I mean, and this is like for low-income kids in the poorest of our schools, which, oh, newsflash, is a lot of our rural schools.
Exactly.
You know, and I mean, this means that they will not see those federal dollars. And now these districts, now at the school year, which means the fiscal year just started, are having to figure out how they're going to pay some bills.
Notwithstanding that Common Ed also enjoyed a significant new revenue this year. However, it was diluted with the conversion into the 5% of private schools. And I'm glad to see there'll be some form of a teacher pay increase. But when you're still classified by knowledgeable folks who watch this stuff, 49th in the nation in supporting education. But our governor, this is to me is just another really remarkable statement. He's in Paris. I'm glad he's had time to go watch airplanes land. He says, when confronted about the fact that Oklahoma is still ranked 49th in the nation, this whiz bang says, oh, you've got it wrong. We're 14th in the country if you remove Tulsa and Oklahoma City. Now, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about what this goober thinks or knows, I can't give you a better example. And that's the kind of statement that also goes worldwide. You want an answer as to why companies like maybe Volkswagen or some of the others have been very difficult to attract to Oklahoma? Imagine sitting down with that guy and listening to him prattle on forever. And still giving nearly $1 billion, and they still have to be begged to consider us. Good grief.
And this guy. It is astonishing the lack of self-awareness, right? Just like you hear yourselves, Governor Stitt, you're talking about the two largest school districts with the two largest, you know, student populations in the state of Oklahoma. And you're saying they are the ones holding the state back. And again, going back to Ryan, because boy, I have a memory of this conversation. He was like, it's not about money. How are we 49th in the country? It's not about money. It's like, okay, sir, then what is it? Okay, so then he jumps to, he says, we need to focus on the science of reading. And I'm going to tell you, at least 75% of the people in that room were teachers who were pissed off. And you could have just heard the groan. The science of reading is not new. It's not new. And then he goes on, as a parent of a dyslexic child, I can tell you he's full of shit, because he's like, you just have to get, you just, it's just about repetition. You have, I was like, actually, no, that's not what it's about. But okay. So, I mean, just the nonsense that he pulls out of thin air without any sense of consequence of his words are just stunning. I mean, literally the educators in there were about to throw chairs at the man.
Well, I would add on that very evening, I've watched some of the videos. He's he A, thinks, as I've written, thinks he's always the smartest guy in the room, which is difficult to understand based on his background, but that's what he thinks. And so the approach has always been, I'm pretty good at the gab, so I'll just kind of bullshit my way around. Nobody will catch me. But when caught, as he was by whoever the fellow was that made him three times go back and explain why the Tulsa massacre was not related somehow to race, if you watch all that dance, he finally was cornered to the point where he said, I've answered the question. Until the next day, when everybody had had the opportunity to see the exchange of words, then he did what most politicians do because it works. He blamed you all. He said it was the press that didn't report accurately what he had said. Well, fortunately, somebody had a video.
Oh, yeah. There was plenty of people recording the entire thing that night.
There you go. There you go. And by the way, whether you all are aware of it, he was scheduled to be here in the city at another Republican confab up at the Oklahoma Blood Institute on North Portland in Oklahoma City on the 25th of July, and it has been canceled.
Hmm.
Maybe even they couldn't bring themselves to be in the same room with the fellow.
See, I'm not entirely convinced that these guys are that unself-aware. I think that they know that if you just keep repeating the big lie often enough, that you just wear people down. And I think Walters gets a kick out of all this. I think this is all gaslighting. I mean, I think this is very Trumpian. He gets headlines out of it. He leads the newscast. He does all this stuff, and he loves every minute of it. But it's not governing. That's the problem. And 700.
That's not the sexy part, right? Governing is not the sexy part.
No, it's putting on a show. 700,000 plus school kids' lives depend on what's happening at that State Department of Education, not to mention the teachers and the communities and the future of Oklahoma. It looks to me like between 10 years of budget, the nation's worst budget cuts for K-12 schools and for higher ed, and then add to it this era of Stitt and now Walters, I think Oklahoma's on the verge of losing a generation. I'm going to be long gone by the time this state has a chance to recover, I'm afraid.
Such an important point. And you mentioned Trump. I was planning to avoid it, but I did catch a few minutes of his talk the other night. I think it was in Pickens, South Carolina, where amazingly enough, he's running well ahead of the United States Senator from South Carolina, well ahead of the former Republican governor from South Carolina. They love him there. And one of the lines that got one of the biggest rounds of applause was the following. Trump said, just to scare the bejesus out of everybody, he said, and as you all know, millions of undocumented illegals are flowing into this country every month, direct quote. And they all groaned. And he said, as you all know, they're drug dealers, they're rapists, they're murderers. And basically, you're not safe, but I will make you safe. No wonder little bitty people like Ryan Walters or even Governor Stitt thinks that's the way to succeed. You just are so hypocritical that the public's so damn dumb that you can say anything.
So how dangerous is this moment for Oklahoma and for the future of Oklahoma, do you think?
Couple thoughts. I think there's an element in the legislature that's beginning to understand. Some of them figured it out quicker than others, but there were 11 no votes when John Echols, the majority floor leader, stood up to pass the charter or tax credit bill, whatever you want to call it. It's diversion of money from public schools to private schools. There were 11 out of the 81 Republicans that voted no. Now, the name on that bill was McCall, Speaker of the House. That took some guts from those 11 because they live and die as to whether they have paint on their door, meaning are they the vice chairman of some damn thing or not, or the assistant whip off, third right, that kind of thing. I think there's some element of that that's beginning to seep through. It's taken a while, but remember in 2024, the Speaker of the House has to leave. The pro tem of the Senate, I think, also is term limited or very close to it. That's going to have a turnover of the leadership pecking order. Will they be different? That depends on whether Oklahomans, rank and file, want them to be different, or if Oklahomans continue to just buy the horse hockey that gets peddled every day by the individuals we've been talking about.
Well, I'm not confident, I hate to say, and I don't mean to be such a downer about it, but I'm amazed at the gullibility of folks. Although I did see a recent Sooner poll that suggested that Donald Trump is upside down in Oklahoma now. And I thought, well, you know, maybe it is, you know, maybe it's slowly beginning to seep in.
Let me jump in again and interrupt, because I wanted to make this quick point about why it is so difficult to crack through this seemingly impervious wall. Remember that Stitt at 7 p.m. On the election night was already 700,000 votes ahead because of straight party voting. Mm-hmm. That is such an enormous killer when you have so many people that just go in. And Democrats used to love it, I understand. But you start that far behind and it trickles down. People have to really search for Gina Nelson down at the superintendent of schools running against this nitwit. And she lost because it's hard work, A, to be informed, and B, to take the time to find the candidates. The other two issues, quality recruitment. It's very difficult to get people in rural areas to think they have a chance when people say you don't have a chance. And third, the money system is rigged. And by that, you're aware that the leadership can create all kinds of PACs, political action committees, and dole out $2,900 per cycle to their favorite candidates. And that's serious money in rural legislative races. And when you repeat that with five or six of the leaders, each with a PAC, and each being able to give in the primary runoff in general, that adds up to about $70,000. The Democrat is begging for, with a tin cup, $10 here and $5 there. So those three reasons underscore your pessimism. But again, I'm a bit of an optimist and think we've hit bottom and have a chance to crawl back out with some time and patience.
Let's think about this a minute, though. You've got the governor, you've got the state superintendent all railing and doing everything they can do to undermine public education in Oklahoma. You may have lost out, we don't know, millions in federal dollars. We don't know what was applied for and what wasn't. You know, the economy's slowing here in Oklahoma. The state revenues are beginning to slow again. You know, this largesse that we've been sitting on, thanks primarily to federal dollars and then sort of a spike, a post-COVID, if you will, spike. It looks to me like this has worked brilliantly for, again, the DeVosses, the Waltons, you know, the Kochs, those folks who have fought public education for years. Because if you defund it, and if you tarnish its, you know, you have a constant beating on its image, you know, from the top with your superintendent and your governor and so forth, it looks to me like the system could in many ways just sort of collapse.
The word
opportunity. Because people would say, you know, well, see, you know, the opponents would say, well, see, you know, it was a bad system.
That's right.
Fun systems.
Right. That's right. The word I was thinking of when you were wrapping up that sentence was it implodes on itself. And there's another element that's not talked about much anymore because the removal of the grocery tax battle, Stitt failed on that, but embedded in the next 2 to 3 years are the tax cuts already passed, the full kicking in of the 0.25% on personal income tax, the abolition of the $55 million worth of the franchise tax, a further reduction of the corporate income tax, mm-hmm. all designed to shift the burden, obviously, to people who pay the sales tax away from corporations and businesses. That's embedded. So should we see, we know we're going to see the reductions in federal dollars, think Medicaid, the reductions mm-hmm. recently in Medicaid, add that to the embedded tax cuts, and who knows where oil prices will settle if they do. Your scenario is quite provable. Just say 1985 all over again. Been there, done that.
And yet we're going to be surprised when it happens.
Oh, shocked. It's the one about Casablanca.
Yep.
Well, and I just remember a few years ago when the 35,000 teachers and students and parents and supporters of public education stormed the Capitol, that, boy, the legislature, you would have thought, you know, they had been drawn and quartered. I mean, it was the most unhappy place on the planet. And they haven't forgotten that, some of those folks. And, you know, and some of that, some of this reaction is, you know, is a result of that. But they don't know how bad it was in 1985. And you were on the front lines then. I had left Oklahoma and gone to Texas by then, but I watched it from afar and it was like, oh my gosh. And George Nye would tell me about it when I'd see him.
What a year that was. And just as a fluke, I ended up carrying the tax bill that year, the big one, House bill. I'll never forget it, 1219. I had just filed a shell bill, being the kind of guy that represents Norman, related to the tax code, Title 68. And I was passing then Speaker Jim Barker in the hall. And I was already in trouble with Barker, but I just said to the speaker, oh, by the way, Mr. Speaker, I know we're going to have a tax bill. We have to raise taxes. And he says, yes, we're going to. You can count on it. And I said, who's carrying the bill? What's the bill number? And he said, you are. Bill 1219.
Congratulations.
And that is how I found out. Look it up. That was the bill number, and that's how I ended up carrying that bill back in 1985. Well, I wanted to mention to you, go ahead, sorry.
History repeats itself, doesn't it?
It does. You got a test case I want you all to watch over the next couple, 3 months. It may go nowhere, but think about it. And one of you mentioned it last night. There may be a chance to test the angst of the public down in Lawton, America.
Yes.
You know where I'm going.
Yes.
Yep, on John Montgomery, yeah.
Yes.
Why don't you all pick it up and take it where I think I was going?
No, well, I mean, Comanche County should be a D pickup, right?
It's close. It's close based on recent elections.
Yes.
But you got to have the right candidate.
Yes.
And you got to have them funded.
Yes and yes. And when we were up at the state Democratic Party convention in Tulsa back in, I guess it was June.
Yeah.
Happened to be in the elevator with a young couple from Lawton. Both were Black. A woman was very talkative. And she said, I am working on picking up a seat down here in Lawton to be a House seat, and I'm going to run. I said, well, I think you're in the area where it's possible. Anyway, I'm trying to find her name. If she gets into that Senate race, She was very presentable, very smart. We'll see. We'll see if Oklahoma's had enough of this other nonsense. And, you know, miracles happen. That'd be a real boost for 2024, wouldn't it?
Well, back to what I was saying last night. We don't have to have a majority to make a difference. We can just have an ornery but slightly larger minority and do some major damage on legislation.
And do you know what?
You don't have to go that far back in history to see how Republicans played that very game, right, Cal?
We're going to the same place. Every time I've had Frank Keating in class, and to his credit, he's come six or seven times. He seems to love it. And I appreciate him coming. He's an important person in Oklahoma. He never fails, or I find some way to mention the following. Out of 302 vetoes that Frank Keating signed, turning down 302 bills, some of them good bills, not a single one was overridden. Not one. Compare that to Goofus, who apparently doesn't understand or care that he's so disregarded by his own majorities in the House and Senate that they just blithely override almost everything he vetoes. I don't know how he sleeps at night, knowing that they think so little of him. But,
well, it really, I think we'd have a few more vetoes that had been overridden if they had just run the clock right, and not scheduled the vote when four members in the Senate were going to be gone, all of whom who have voted to override the veto. So it's like, why did we schedule that vote when you knew those members weren't going to be here? But anyways, that's a whole other issue, right? So,
but you're right. That's right. You don't do those kinds of things. You don't bring up bills, by the way. And this is Treat's fault, a nice man, apparently. But, you know, he didn't have the votes last year, actually the year before, not this past session, but the year before, when he was trying to cram charter schools down the throats of his rural members, he got his clock cleaned. If you're the pro tem, you don't trot out a bill that you can't count to 25 on. And, of course, he punished some of those people that voted against him, but he's much weaker because of that situation, which is why, as you said, Marianne, members of his own party apparently went to the Paris Air Show or maybe to the Dibble knitting conference or something other than coming.
There was two Democrats that would have voted for it that weren't going to be there. And he still scheduled the stupid vote.
That's right. Yeah. I hear
Again,
you.
We had competent bills.
Okay, you know. I keep hearing chatter among Republicans that there's serious conversation about impeachment with Ryan Walters. I believe it when I see it. I don't think. You remember when the style was everybody wore yellow power ties? You remember that? Well, they've taken those ties on the front and they put the yellow stripe down their back. I just don't see them doing that at all. But secondly, I don't know where that gets us, because Jethro Bodine's going to appoint his replacement, right? So, I mean, and maybe it'll be somebody who can do more damage because he's less of a bomb or performance artist, and maybe understands that you could really do some damage if you weren't drawing attention to yourself as a buffoon.
Yes, that may, depending on what comes out from the audits, who knows? Maybe there people talk in terms of, well, the FBI is back in town and they're interviewing these people. You've heard it. Both have heard it. You know, until you see the indictment papers down at the grand jury, then I don't think anybody's going to go seriously to an impeachment process. We all know how difficult that can be based on we don't like somebody, or somebody is stupid, or somebody says dumb things. Those are not impeachable offenses although in some cases it should be, but I don't, I'm with you is what I'm trying to say.
So meanwhile, our public education system hangs in the balance.
It clearly does, because the only time where there was any semblance of a multi-year plan for public education, again, goes back to Henry Bellman, Bob Cullison, Steve Lewis, 1990 to 1995. That was a $7,500 teacher pay increase, $1,500 a year. That was real money back then. Teachers were making about $22,000-$23,000. So if you add $7,500, that's about a 30% increase. That's a serious increase. The enrollment in the education colleges jumped up. We also, by the way, in 1981, guess who was ranked first and third in salaries in what was then the old Big Eight universities? OU was first, OSU was third. Now, I happened to be there and I was for it, but it was because of the price of oil. But if you remove those anecdotal timeframes, we've just kind of limped along, hoping that the courage and commitment of public school teachers would carry us along. But they've had it. You cannot keep calling those people terrorists and having to put up with what they put up with in the classroom with parents or at school board meetings anymore. They don't teach for not much money to have their lives threatened or abused or call names at Walmart. Enough is enough. And then when you add on the leadership pounding the hell out of them on a daily basis with the things that are said, who blames them for going to Texas or getting out of the business entirely?
Yep. No, I mean, I don't blame a single person. No one should have to put up with that professionally. You know, and this really, it is interesting because, I mean, on the one hand, like last night, you know, as Aaron Wilder brought up at, you know, Brews and Views, he's like, education is the focal point of every election. You know, it is the main talking point, and yet it does no good for Democrats. And at the same time, we put so much, we place so much pressure on teachers as if we care about them. You know, and I mean, so we like to talk like it's their jobs are important to us, and yet we continually treat them like trash, right? And we expect them to just take it. And I think that is largely because it's such a feminized profession that we can, you know, we talk out of both sides of our mouths. And then you have this monster like Ryan Walters, because he's nothing less than that. He is a monster. What he is doing is just pure evil, to vilify human beings like this. And we expect teachers to just put up with it. I'm like, you know, I have two kids in public schools in Oklahoma, and if their teachers left, I wouldn't blame them one second. But, you know, my kids would be fine. We could pick up the slack, but go. No, you don't, no one needs to put up with this. From a labor perspective, not a single teacher needs to put up with this.
And could I remind us at least that it hasn't always been this way. You can pick out, I can remember through the years, special stalwarts that stepped up in the area of education. Let me just mention three things, if we still have time.
Yep.
It wasn't by accident that the School of Science and Math got created. That was a war. And it was because of women, Penny Williams, Bernice Shedrick, Carolyn Thompson Taylor, and others, women who worked, that took 3 years, by the way, took that long to finally get that pushed across the finish line. And today, there's not a single voice, I don't think, with any credibility that would say, gosh, I wish we didn't have a School of Science and Math. It's been a remarkable success.
Second, it's a crown jewel.
Absolutely. Secondly, there was the scholarship program that identified kids from poor and middle-income families and provided those scholarships, if they stayed in school, maintained at least a 2.0 or 2.5, and then they were ready for college. And that program, I was there for the beginning of it.
This is how we have leader Cindy Munson.
Exactly. Yes.
But in that case, it was Maxine Horner that started that back in the early 80s. The family income was $22,000. We didn't put a penny in for several years, but I was around long enough that finally in 2000, I wore down old Jack Begley from the Panhandle, who was the subcommittee education chairman. I was the house, and we got it raised to $50,000, and a whole bunch more kids became eligible. That program turned out to be pretty damn important. And I hope nobody forgets the Merit Scholar Program that Carolyn Thompson Taylor started in 1984. OU and OSU only attracted 6 National Merit Scholars from Oklahoma that year, 6 total, 4 at OSU, 2 at OU. The other 50 went out of state. And the last time I checked, OU had nearly 500 National Merit Scholars on scholarship, 400 to 500. So you can do those things, but you got to want to do things like that instead of getting a press release about badgering some poor librarian in Wapanucka.
Or trying to revoke the teaching license of someone who is relocated to New York City.
That would be another good example. That's right.
Right. After the attorney general's office has said they did absolutely nothing wrong.
That's right. Hypocrisy, the word of the night.
Yep.
But Arnold, you cannot be Debbie Downer to me. You cannot do that. The Observer is the voice of optimism.
I think this is a good place to leave this.
Okay.
Is the reminder that we need to play a long game.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That we're not going to change things in the next election cycle, although we can make some gains. But right. we have to take a page from the Republicans and be dedicated to playing the long game and making steady gains every single year. And we know we have a good track record with special elections. We are aces as a party with special elections. We need to keep doing that and make steady gains across the state and keep speaking reason, even if it feels like we're screaming into the void. And I'm going to go back to the Medicaid expansion bill, the ballot, right? It yep. looked really, really bad when all the rural areas, we thought all the rural areas had turned on us. But just like we said last night, the rural areas got us across the finish line. It was the white affluent suburbs that kind of, you know, stuck the knife in our backs, but we still got it across the finish line.
That's right.
Yep. So we've got to hyper-localize our messaging and just keep up the steady drumbeat that we are the adults in the room. Rather than looking for instant gratification in the next election cycle and a big sweep, it's not going to happen. But we can pull a Stacey Abrams. We can just stay our eye on the prize and focus in 2030, you know, 2040, all those years, and we will get there.
I'm with you. Well said. Targeted races. I had 4 special elections in the 3 years I was pro tem, and I won all 4 of them because I did what you just said. Targeted money, quality candidates, being organized, and having a message that resonated. Those 4 people, and 3 of the 4 were women. Uh-huh. Debbie Lefkowitz was a special election. Kevin Easley's mother, Mary uh-huh. Easley, was a special election. There were 2 others that we won. And I remember talking to poor old Jim Williamson, who was the minority leader for part of the time I was majority boss, and the other one was Glenn Coffey, and they would just come in all hangdog after we had won the night before. I couldn't have been happier because I only had 26 votes, and it takes 25 to do anything. Uh-huh. But by golly, tonight's not the night, but there are a number of bills that little caucus pulled together and passed that have made a huge difference just one if I may, that dollar a pack cigarette tax increase of 2003, that's where the Stevenson Cancer Center came from. Also, Harold Hamm's Diabetes Center and the two level one trauma centers. That was where the money went. And those are the kind of differences you can make if you keep your eye on the prize. Thank you.
Okay. So, you know, I think Arnold and I just saw this as a good opportunity, and you're teeing us up nicely, you know, to spend the next couple of weeks really diving into what are the real implications of a riot alters in this state, and to dive in what it means to our school districts and to our education system. So thank you so much for this conversation. Thank you for letting me put you on the spot last night. I just, is what I do in my work, my real world job is be a professional pain in the ass. And so when I see an opportunity, I have to take it. So thank you so much for meeting with us on such short notice. This was a fantastic conversation, as always.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
See y'all.
We'll see you again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.